So the last talk for today's session will be by Eric Vivier from the CIML in Marseille on harnessing innate immunity in cancer therapy.
Okay, well, first, thank you very much for the invitation. It's great to be here. It's great to be in Paris and great to be in this particular amphitheater. So what I'll try to do today is to review for you what we have been doing over the last years, trying to harness innate immunity in cancer therapies. This is my disclosure slide, and actually most of the work that you will see in the second part of this presentation has been performed by my colleague at Innate Pharma. Okay, so speaking about cancer, and there have been a presentation on this earlier today, it's obvious that T cells can in certain conditions control cancer. But we also know from decades of immunology that T cells are not autonomous in what they do, at least for most of them. And this is why we are trying to harness cells of the innate immune system in order to provide another angle to fight against cancer. In particular, we have focused our work on innate lymphoid cells and particular subtypes of innate lymphoid cells called natural killer cells. But I was thinking that it might be interesting to review for you what we know about these innate lymphoid cells more generally, and in particular, the unexpected heterogeneity of these cells. So innate lymphoid cells are lymphocytes which do not express antigen-specific receptors due to DNA rearrangements. And so they come in different flavors, as you can see here. But as you can also appreciate, there are some cells that are really linked together, at least in that scheme, which are the natural killer cells on one side and ILC ones on the other side. And actually, for decades, since the discovery of natural killer cells back 50 years ago, these cells have been considered to be the same. Actually, nobody spoke about ILC ones back 10 years ago. In fact, we have been trying to use other technologies, such as CiteSeq, as you can see here, to re-evaluate, to revisit the heterogeneity that can be hidden behind a prototypical phenotype of natural killer cells. So here, I'm sharing with you unpublished data on the CiteSeq analysis of natural killer cell phenotype cells in the mouse, but there are other data coming up in humans. So basically, So basically, it starts with this very homogeneous phenotype here of cells being NK cells. In the B6 mouse, there will be lineage negative, NKp46 plus, NK1.1 plus. But you can see from the right-hand side that using the CiteSeq technology, we can discover an unexpected heterogeneity hidden behind this phenotype. And I have no time to go through the details, but there are some take-home messages that I would like to share with you. So first of all, a major difference between NK and ILC ones is that ILC ones are mostly tissue-resident cells, in contrast to NK cells that can circulate. And these cells are very much imprinted by the tissue of residency. You can appreciate that here when you see actually a score of the different subset of cells. So if you concentrate of ILC1, subset 1 and 5, you can appreciate that they are mostly, they are very high score for resident lymphocytes. And we have taken here the data available for tissue-resident memory cells, in contrast to NK cells, which rather score high for the circulating cells. So there are differences here. But there is also a diversity between NK and ILC1 that comes from the fact that these cells, at least for some of these subsets, are really coming from distinct lineages. And this is particularly true in the liver, where you can appreciate that there is really a distinction between NK and ILC ones. And joining forces with some colleagues in Shanghai, we have actually shown very recently that liver ILC ones originate in the adult from the liver and not from the bone marrow. The NK-ILC1's diversity stems also from different activation status. And again here, if you just concentrate on liver ILC1s, it's very small, you probably can't read it, but believe me, one can distinguish two subsets of ILC1s based on the fact that some of these cells are more immature than others. And finally, which really makes the story very complex, is that some of these ILC1s are actually coming from NK cells after treatment or after imprinting by environment cues, in particular in the salivary glands. These NK cells, upon TGF-beta, are becoming ILC1s. So this was just to give you a flavor of this new world of lymphocytes, which is very exciting to explore, but I would admit quite complex. So let's focus now on our effort to harness the function of NK cells against cancer cells. And so we think it's important to do that for different reasons, in particular the first one that I mentioned, that targeting cells of the innate immune system can actually lead to the initiation and the maintenance of a T cell response. And this is also true for NK cells. Most of the time, we think that NK cells might be important because they can kill tumor cells, and in fact, they can. But they can also produce an array of cytokines and chemokines, such as XCL1, CCL5, and FLT3 ligand, which are quite important in the priming of cells and the activation of cells, which themselves can participate to the maintenance and the onset of an anti-tumor T cell response, in particular going through the activation of CDC1. And on top of that, NK cells can produce interferon gamma and other and TNF alpha in some circumstances. So really do not think of NK cells as being killer cells and that's it, because they participate to a multicellular anti-tumor immune response. So how one can try to harness the function of NK cells? So there is something which is very simple, which is that when NK cells are interacted with antibody-coated target cells, they can induce antibody-dependent cell cytotoxicity, as indicated here, when you have this cytotoxic antibody that recognizes a tumor antigen, and again, NK cells, as they are equipped by an activating Fc receptor, CD16, can recognize these antibody-coated target cells, induce the lysis of these cells, but at the same time produce, as I said, cytokines and chemokines. So we started by this, and we said, how can we boost this? And this is what I would like to tell you, and this will be divided in three parts. First, I would like to tell you about monalizumab, which is an immune checkpoint inhibitor candidate. I hope that you will agree with me that monalizumab is probably the best name ever given to an antibody. And so I will tell you about monalizumab in solid tumors. Then I will switch to the NK cell engagers that we are generating, and telling you about the development of these tri-specific NK cell engagers in acute myeloid leukemia. And finally, if I have time, I would like to tell you about the tetra-specific NK cell engagers that we are developing, which are armed with a non-alpha IL-2 variant. So let's start by monalizumab. So you see here the very simple scheme that actually governed these studies. Here, you have cetuximab, which is a cytotoxic antibody, Fc-competent, that recognizes EGFR at the surface of tumor cells, and this is inducing ADCC. It's obvious that cetuximab can also work in vivo in patients by other mechanisms, such as blocking the interaction between EGF and EGFR. But this is a possible mode of action in addition to this blocking of EGF-EGFR interaction. So we reason that this ADCC process could be boosted, stimulated, if one could unleash NK cells. And one way of unleashing NK cells is really to block the interaction between NKG2A, which is a prototypical ITIM-bearing cell surface molecule that recognizes a non-polymorphic MHC class 1 molecule called HLA-E. So here, we are really directing the activation of NK cells, and here we are unleashing effector function of NK cells. So the preclinical results of this have been published in this paper, but we have also, this also led to a phase 2 clinical trial in patients having head and neck cancer, and you can appreciate from this study, which is a positive phase 2 clinical trial, that there is indeed an advantage to the combination of monalizumab and cetuximab. Obviously, this is only a single arm study, so this has limitation in terms of interpretation, but as compared to what has been published in patients presenting the same conditions, this is quite encouraging. But more than that, we have more recently, in collaboration with our colleagues at AstraZeneca, proposed a clinical trial in which patients were treated in a chemo-free regimen, still in head and neck cancer, with a triplet of antibodies, monalizumab, blocking NKG2A, cetuximab, targeting the cells towards EGFR, overexpressed in these tumor cells, but also durvalumab, which is an anti-PD-L1. And as you can appreciate for this interim analysis, it's quite exciting as well. And this is why now monalizumab is going to phase 3 clinical trial in this indication. But I would like to tell you that it's more than that. Because in fact, what I've been telling you so far is really this story here, when you have NK cells as effector cells that can be unleashed by monalizumab. But in fact, it turns out that NKG2A, this inhibitory cell surface receptor, can also be expressed on CD8 T cells. And interestingly, 50% roughly of CD8 T cells at the tumor bed in humans expressing PD-1 can also co-express NKG2A. So when one wants to really unleash the CD8 T cells, there is an obvious interest in trying to block both the PD-1, PD-L1 axis and the NKG2A HLA-E axis. So this is what we've been doing. And in particular, I would like to share with you the result of this other phase 2 clinical trial. Those are interim results with a cutoff at 12 months in patients having non-resectable stage 3 non-small cell lung carcinoma. So these patients have been undergoing first a chemo radiotherapy treatment regimen, and then they have been consolidated using durvalumab, as you can see here. But see what's going on when the patients are actually treated with a combination of monalizumab and durvalumab. You can appreciate that there is a really nice increase in PFS, which leads to the fact that monalizumab is now moving to phase 3 also in non-small cell lung carcinoma. So this was what I would like to tell you about the unleashing of NK cells and T cells, and we would like to propose that actually monalizumab might be one of the first examples of a so-called broad-spectrum immune checkpoint inhibitor, because it not only unleashes T cells, but it also unleashes NK cells and vice versa. So now, let me tell you about our efforts to propose treatments in AML. We all know that AML is still unmet medical need. Unfortunately, it represents the most common acute leukemia in adults, and there have been attempts to generate antibodies against tumor antigen overexpressed in AML blast. And one example of this tumor antigen is actually the alpha chain of the LDH3 receptor, CD123. And there have been antibodies, Fc-enhanced, Fc-engineered, let's say, antibodies targeting CD123, which have been developed even in phase 3 clinical trials. Unfortunately, the results are very disappointing. So we ask a very simple question. What if, indeed, these antibodies are in part, at least, targeting ADCC in NK cells, and can we try to dissect whether this lack of efficacy could be due to a lack of ADCC? And actually, we're very surprised, and this is a story that we have, a study that we have conducted with our colleagues at Sanofi, that in fact there's a very large heterogeneity in the capacity of NK cells to lyse AML blast in the presence of anti-CD23 antibody, as you can appreciate here from these two examples. You can see that one can really divide the cohorts of patients that we could have access to in two categories. The categories in which the AML blasts are killed through ADCC, at least in vitro, and the ones which are resistant. So we tried to understand what was the mechanism behind this, and to make a long story short, we found that the expression of CD64 was actually the cause of this difference. And as you can see here, the CD64 negative, I remind you that CD64 is a high affinity receptor for IgG. So when the AML blasts are CD64 negative, actually the ADCC process is working very well, but in the CD64 positive AML, you can appreciate that this is no longer working. And you have a cartoon here to understand what we think is going on. It's just the fact that the Fc of the cytotoxic antibody is somewhat captured by the CD64, in particular due to the high affinity of CD64 for the Fc portion of the antibodies. And in this scenario, the Fc portion of the antibody can no longer interact with CD16 expressed on NK cells. So we've been using CRISPR-Cas for C64 to really show that this was the case. So this was not good news, obviously, but then we reasoned that actually, beyond the fact that one can unleash NK cells with monalizumab, as I've been telling you, one can also play around with other antibodies to try to harness the ADCC function of NK cells. And this is what we have done by generating these NK cell engagers, and this is what I would like to tell you about now in the context of AML and our discovery of CD64 expressed on AML blast as being a limiting factor for the action of anti-CD123 antibodies. So first, let me remind you what these NK cell engagers are about. So they are made of FAB recognizing a tumor antigen in orange, an Fc gamma 1 that interacts with CD16 and other Fc receptors, but here with CD16 on NK cells, but at the same time can also co-ligate NKp46 due to the fact that there is an FAB that recognizes NKp46 on NK cells. And we could demonstrate in this paper that actually there is really a co-ligation of CD16 on NKp46 in cis, which is leading to a very nice activation of NK cells. So we reason that actually we might be able to generate an NK cell engager targeting CD123 and to compare the activation of NK cells, at least in vitro, with cytotoxic antibodies targeting the same tumor antigen and to see whether this could actually be some kind of a rescue for the lack of efficacy of this anti-CD23 antibody in AML plus cells. And this is what's going on. So here, let's start by CD64 negative AML blast, as I showed you, using the regular cytotoxic antibodies. You have nice ADCC in vitro, and you don't have much more using a tri-specific NK cell engager in this particular setting. But look in the AML positive blast. This is really different, because as I told you, in the AML positive blast, you have actually capture of the Fc gamma 1 by CD64, and you don't have any ADCC, but you can really rescue the activity of NK cells when you use a tri-specific NK cell engager, because this is engaging NKp46 with quite nice affinity, and at the same time, and this is not shown here, but we have the proof that this is indeed the case, it can redirect Fc gamma 1 towards CD16. So basically, you can rescue the activation of NK cells, and you can see that. So this is now tested in humans because this tri-specific NK cell engager is developed by our colleagues at Sanofi in these patients, in particular the AML patients. So now, and to finish up, I would like to tell you that there is other means of using this NK cell engagers, in particular by considering that this is just a platform and we can play around with these different heads. So with the anti-tumor antigen, we can target any kind of tumor antigen that you might think about. Our NK cell engager platform is anchored on the activation of NKp46, which is a strong NK cell activation molecule, but we can also add something else. And here, we have generated tetraspecific NK cell engagers by the addition of a variant of IL-2, a non-alpha IL-2, in order to prevent the activation of Tregs in particular. But the rationale is also here because NK cells constitutively express the IL-2 R-beta. So the idea here is really in the context of synthetic biology to induce a crosstalk between pathways which apparently do not, at least it hasn't been described, cooperate in natural conditions. So we are inducing here the co-ligation in cis of NKp46, CD16, which are high-time-bearing polypeptides inducing the ZAP76 and PI3 kinase pathway. But at the same time, we're also inducing the JAK-STAT pathway through the engagement of IL-2R-beta through this IL-2 variant. And the results are as follows. So first, this tetraspecific NK cell engager is inducing a very strong proliferation of NK cells as expected, which is very different from what one can have using a tri-specific NK cell engager. But what is also important is that when you use the same molar concentration of IL-2 variant, you can appreciate that this tetraspecific NK cell engager is inducing a more robust NK cell proliferation as compared to the IL-2 variant by itself. meaning that one can really redirect, readdress the cytokines that we want here, IL-2, towards NK cells through the binding of to NKp46 and CD16. Now, this is also inducing a strong cytotoxicity and cytokine and chemokine secretion, but I wanted to focus on in vivo data. And we have performed two kinds of in vivo studies, first in immune-deficient mice, where only ILCs, hence NK cells, are present, so this is skin mouse. You can appreciate that in this solid tumor model, when we inject this cell line sub-Q and treat the mice using NK cell engagers, a tetraspecific form, one can really control very drastically the burden of the tumors, which is not the case when one loses NKp46 binders, for example. Interestingly, this is associated with a massive infiltration of NK cells at the tumor bed, something that we don't see otherwise. And these NK cells are not only NK cells, they're activated NK cells that co-express granzyme B. They also produce gamma interferon. So this is good news, I think. Now, we challenge this activity in an immunocompetent mouse model using B16 melanoma, which was transfected with CD20, and treating the mice using a tetraspecific NK cell engager binding CD20, you can appreciate that this is a very nice control of the tumor burden in this model of disseminated tumor. Finally, and I have no time to share that with you, but we have also performed pre-tox studies in non-human primates, and at 0.05 mg per kg or 0.5 mg per kg, we don't see any sign of toxicity, which is very good news. We see minimal increase in pro-inflammatory cytokine in the serum, but 100 times less than what one can see using a B-specific T-cell engager targeting the same tumor antigen. So this is rather good news. Now, mechanistically, we have been also interested to... Oh, this is not going very well. Oh, yes, it does. Well, just the axes are not there. Sorry about that. But we've been also interested, and I'm going to start by this, to look at what kind of genes could be induced selectively or not by this NK cell engager. So I don't want to spend too much time on this, but this is another view of the diversity of NK cells that I briefly mentioned in the first part of my presentation. So there are very different subsets of NK cells which have been described in humans in particular, and you have contributed to that. But what is interesting is that there is a subset of cells that, believe it or not, are called CIML NK cells. So CIML doesn't stand for Centre d'Immunologie de Marseille-Lumini, but for cytokine-induced memory lysis. And frankly, I'm not involved in that naming, but I was thinking that's funny. So anyway, so what we have done is really to look using single-cell RNA-seq and bulk RNA-seq to see whether actually there are some changes in the genes expressed by NK cells upon treatment with a different form of stimulation. And to make a long story short, what we see here is that the treatment of NK cells using the tetraspecific NK cell engagers, also the trispecific NK cell engagers, are really boosting the differentiation of NK cells towards the CIML NK cell subset, which is interesting because these cells have been described by others to be more effector cells and to have a longer longevity as well. So I think I'm going to stop here just by telling you, by starting with this regular classical ADCC, one can play around with the beauty of the Lego of the antibody technology to make trispecific NK cell engagers or tetraspecific NK cell engagers, and hopefully this molecule will be helpful to help patients in cancer conditions. So I would like to thank all the people involved in this work. So as I said, the NK cell engager platform that we call ANKET for antibody-based NK cell engager therapeutics has been developed by our colleagues at Init Pharma. We have collaborated with Roger Legrand, obviously, for the non-human primate study. And those are the people working with me at the CIML and the Marseille Public Hospital. Finally, I would like to tell you that we are trying to fight against cancer, not only in Marseille, but also in Paris now through the Paris-Saclay Cancer Cluster, something that I would like to talk to you about if you're interested. We are trying to create here a large cluster against cancer. And everybody is much welcome to participate. Thank you very much for your attention.